Warrior Connection. This is Doug Rocky coming from the sunny state of Illinois. And hopefully Denise Nichols from Colorado will join us. And tonight we're asking people to call in, too. If they got any concerns and everything, we're going to be talking about two important things. The Institute of Medicine, along with the Department of Veteran Affairs, is coming up to redefine what we know as Gulf War illness. All of us have been involved from day one know that this is a multiple exposure physiological consequence of everything that happened over there, in addition to the ethical and moral compromises that we had to deal with. So we've got all those major problems, and again, the VA and the IOM want to redefine all this to get out from responsibility. Couldn't be worse for the military of the past, couldn't be worse for the military of the current, couldn't be worse for the military of the future. We also need to do a little bit of review on DU and the health effects of DU and the medical directives that all existed. So why don't we get off this right off the bat? Denise, are you here tonight?
I am. And to start off, the Institute of Medicine was contracted by the VA to do this review again, 12 months worth of work starting. We had our first meeting on the 26th of June. And let me tell you what the scope of the situation is. Okay? It's an ad hoc committee who would develop a consensus case definition for chronic multi-symptom illness as it pertains to the 1991 Gulf War veteran population. It will review, evaluate, and summarize the available scientific and medical literature regarding symptoms for the CMI, chronic multi-symptom illness, among the 91 Gulf War veterans. It'll look broadly for relevant material, including but not limited to, number one, peer review literature concerning existing case definition. Number two, peer review literature concerning existing case definition among similar populations, such as allied military personnel. Number three, published peer review literature concerning case definitions for other populations. Discussion with researchers involving developing a case definition for chronic multi-symptom illness. Five, discussion with clinicians who treat Gulf War veterans. And then in addition to that, establish a consensus case definition along with guidelines for its use, evaluating existing case definitions in relation to priorities identified by the committee, and determine whether an existing case definition is adequate, or an existing case definition needs to be revised, or a new case definition needs to be established, and determine specificity or sensitivity, meaning to the degree which the definition applies to 1991 Gulf War veterans, degree to which the case definition captures the excessive symptomology in the Gulf War veterans, reliability, and portability, where it can be suitable for different study designs. Consider the potential for case definition optimized for research purposes to be used in clinical practice. Consider other case definitions that are important. Recommend additional areas of research or study that may be required to more adequately develop the consensus, and evaluate the terminology currently in use. Now, it's important to point out that, again, we go to a VA-sponsored IOM committee. Now, the Research Advisory Committee on Gulf War Illness, that has a lot of scientists, doctors, researchers that have done this type of case definition in other problems. And they have stated that this isn't the way to go about it. And what you do is you call all the experts together and have a conference. And at the end of this conference, they propose something, not a 12-month review of literature.
You know, I think one thing that we need to bring up here, I'm going to get some very right off the bat, very, very important for everybody to understand. Peer-reviewed publications. What peer-reviewed means is politically correct. Ladies and gentlemen, you need to understand this. Peer-reviewed publications means that there was a group of doctors or scientists, one or more, that worked together over a period of time, And they came up with the ideas, and they tried to put it together, and then they wrote a paper, and then they published a paper in a journal. And again, publication in a journal, especially peer-reviewed, means it's politically correct. Now, both Denise and I and others, again, from the primary medical staff from Desert Storm, have been involved where we've testified before the Institute of Medicine, IOM, on numerous occasions. We've got appointed to the Center for Disease Control. We sat on that. We went before the PSOB, which is Special Oversight Board, that was supposed to oversee OSAGWI, which was Rotzker and Mikey Kilpatrick. And one of the things that happened, and Denise, I think you and I were both right there, and it was absolutely devastating, is when at the Institute of Medicine, they refused to accept or look at the original medical reports from the exposures and the health effects and the medical directives, because they said, well, that's not peer-reviewed publication. Well, when we did all this work and got all the medical records and put everything together, there was nothing to peer review about, because this is not research where we're looking at statistical averages. We're looking at the reality of what happened. And I know with Merle Nass, when she walked in with the actual full reports and everything, complete total reports on anthrax, the anthrax vaccine, and the health effects of the anthrax vaccine, which is what we knew from day one, because we have to come back to it. Fort Detrick, Maryland, the U.S. Army sent the weaponized anthrax to Iraq, totally verified in congressional and Senate investigations. That's the Jimmy Toot did that report called the Regal Commission. So all this information is out there. So when it comes down to peer-reviewed publications, it's just a way of disregarding the actual medical reports from day one, the known health effects from all this complex toxic exposures that was known about from day one, and another way to redefine everything to avoid any responsibility for what has now turned close to over 300,000 Desert Storm veterans. That's 60% are now sick. And we're looking at 60% from OIF and OEF being sick now with all the same exposures. So, I mean, Denise, how did they address these issues where they're just totally disregarding the original reports, original information, and the actual medical reports from the patients?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to state what we have to be aware of is you have to do your research on who they put on these panels. And the panels, if it's weighted heavily towards psychological being stress versus a true looking at neurotoxins as a problem physiologically.
Well, that was day one report on the psychological, because when we were up there, again, the decision was made to Walter Reed to do it all psychological, because otherwise war would become illegal and everybody say, I'm not going to war because I'm going to get trashed from the complex toxic exposures and the weapons and destruction we wrought, which is what has happened.
Yeah. And so, you know, every time that we have an IOM committee, what people need to look at is who they put on this committee, okay? And it's been overwhelming toward the psychological with every panel that we've had. Now, what happened on the 26th is we had in the morning it was a closed session. The second day was a closed session, so, you know, people couldn't listen in, couldn't be there. The open session happened in the afternoon on the 26th, where the VA, you know, explains their charge to the IOM. And then we had the panels, which started off with after the VA, you know, presented their charge to them, that we had a panel of four of us, GAFOR veterans, talking about the symptoms we had experienced. Then we had a panel of, like, the RAC chairman, Mr. Benz. We had Leah Still, Roberta White, some very good people that have worked with definitions for working with the research on GAFOR illness. Leah Still has one of the definitions that has been used. There's quite a few definitions out there, and it does need to be brought together, but whether it's done in the proper way here is a question with the proper members of a panel to bring it together. So it was very well spelled out to them that we knew the background of what they've done on every IOM panel. We knew the background of the panel members. We really put a warning sign out to to this committee, that we knew how it's been conducted before, and you know, we put a warning out. You know, don't do the same thing you've been doing here. Do it, you know, the best way possible, and look at the physiological damage and look at what's been out there. So we sounded the alarm of, hey, we're not going to put up with this much longer. And good information was put out. We then had a panel with the researchers and doctors that have dealt with Gulf War vets, both from the war-related illness centers and Dr. Bronick from Georgetown, had, you know, a pretty good afternoon session, I would say. But this is very important because, you know, I use it in research studies and selecting, you know, once you have the definition that goes into the criteria of who will be able to be part of the research study. It also, you know, can be translated into clinical use. It also can be translated into use with your compensation and, you know, process. So it affects everybody that is involved. It was interesting, to say the least. There was some very, very good presentations. We had one of our vets, Keith Nordic, that caught all the audio capture. We have files of that if people want to listen to those segments of the audio capture that was done by listening in on the phone and grabbing it and getting it online for everybody else to hear if they weren't able to call in. We have the written and PowerPoints. We're still gathering the rest of them to be shared so you can go through the slides that were used by the researchers and doctors. Mr. Benz is there, Leah Steele, Roberta White, Bronick. We've got quite a few of those so that you can be brought up to date, and we'll be sure that that's on the website. I know that I was one of the four. Anthony Hardy was there and really presented the warning signal first off to the committee of, you know, knowing exactly who's on the committee, how it's slanted to one side or the other, and really, you know, laying the case out for what was being done. Then Angie McLam of Idaho had come in. Angie was in the Army, was combat air control person. And if anybody knows, the ability to do that is a multitasking and executive management skills right there in wartime, you know, directing combat air control. Angie has suffered like all of us. She had documented all of her symptoms and tried to get through a lot of them, ran out of time. I picked it up, and my main thing was to really point out clearly that there is neurological problems, endocrinology problems, and immune system problems. All these are not psychological. And I pointed out some of the unique symptoms, trying to make it stand out to those that were going to be judging everything, that this is not stress. It is based in physiological neurotoxin damage to the brain and some of the unique symptoms that you cannot fake. You know, you can't fake it. It's not related to stress, and it's real. We were followed up by David Winnett, who's a Marine, and he had about 4 or 5 pages ready to present, and he got about halfway through it and decided to break away from that, like I've done before also, but really give them a peace of mind and really calling out any commanders, any senior NCOs that they needed to come and be involved and speak up for their troops, and that this has been going on for 22 years. So, you know, the vets did very well overall as a panel. Our people from the RAC summarizing things in PowerPoints were very effective. We had some very good doctors. We had Dr. Ashford from Loma Linda War-Related Illness. And so, you know, combined, they have a lot to think about. But, again, we're looking at a peer-reviewed process, And coming back to your thought, Doug, actual reports from the Gulf War occurring then and after, after action reports and all, are not published in peer-reviewed journals.
They never will be, and they never were, because we didn't have any laboratory controls. I mean, I spent my career at the university, all right, and I've been involved in peer-reviewed research and literature forever and ever and ever. The work we did with the original reports would never be shown to a peer review because there were no controls. This is what the reality has. This is what the reality is.
And a lot of the things that have been done, be it the registry exams, which they have not pulled up all the data and summarized it and, you know, put all the data and statistics together to do that, even reporting on what they have found, much less any control factor, be it normal, healthy age group matched, is not done. So if it's not peer-reviewed and published, they do not put any weight on it through the IOM, National Academy of Science process, and it's what is dictated in contracts from the VA to the IOM, National Academy of Science.
Well, that's set up so that they don't find anything. It's sort of like when they're doing a research. They put out a research award and a research grant, and I've been involved in both ends of this stuff. And all of a sudden I realize, especially when I find out, well, there's another research project and these guys are doing the research on it, but then I find out they've been never given any of the primary information. They've never been given any of the original medical reports. They've never been given any of the original contamination determination and measurement reports. They've never been shown any of the photographs or videos from this stuff. They've never actually looked at a patient, any of us, to see what had happened. But then we come down to the same thing, and this again, which is for me totally frustrating with the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, especially with the depleted uranium. John Gingrich, who was the previous chief of staff, said, well, we've been following 79 individuals and all the individuals involved in friendly fire and everything else for years and years and years. Well, they never had, because I had 424 individuals, again, that we briefed. And if you remember, Mikey Kilpatrick and Rosker actually told Bill Clinton's staff at the PSOP there were 424. I mean, 113 that actually survived friendly fire. Mine was 123 count, not 113. And then we had another 300 and some involved in all our operations. So they never did the medical care. And they never did the testing. They never, ever did it. And so here he's coming along and said over and over again, well, we've been doing it and we didn't have any problems. Well, it's totally the opposite, because when you go into the Department of Veteran Affairs reports, it confirms all the physiological effects. When you go into the Department of Defense briefings with the Wakayama briefing on DU, as you know, Denise, it confirms lung cancer, eye, respiratory, RNA, DNA changes, which has been confirmed all over the place. But this is reality medicine. This is not laboratory rat medicine where it's peer-reviewed publications. This is the reality stuff that's never been accepted in the IOM or in the VA Research Board, because they knew from day one, oh, my God, we had all these health problems. So these were defined in the Medical Management Chemical and Biological Casualties course that our team taught day one. And what happened is all this stuff is synergistic in nature. So, you know, as we've gone through this stuff, and, I mean, I just get so frustrated because all the discussions, the interactions, people confused, they don't know. Everybody was looking for one thing that caused it, and it never did. It was a whole complex thing. And the other thing, too, for people that don't understand synergism, you have two different things that can be below a toxic level of exposures, but they both affect the same physiological system. So individually, you don't necessarily have a medical problem, or it won't be seen as acute or even long term, but when you put the two together, all of a sudden you get an acute response. But, you know, I've been frustrated. How do you explain that to people that don't have the anatomy, the physiology, the chemistry, or the physics to understand it? And when the leaders absolutely have made the decision at IOM, CDC, and the VA that they're going to disregard it? I mean, where do we go, Denise?
Well, I will say a couple of things here. Number one, is we've had a lot of research, animal studies that were not accepted for Gulf War illness where they were for Agent Orange. And Mr. Benz pointed that out time and time again with Congressman Shea's testimony and again in his testimony to this IOM panel. And that cuts us short. I mean, they should look at animal studies. because you can't recreate this stuff, but you can partially recreate it with some of the animal studies. We've had excellent work from Duke, from Georgia University, and that work helped to at least get us some compensation started, okay? The work going on now is really hard, hard data, and we're not funded to the level that we can do large numbers in research. We may only get $10 million. We started with the CDMRP back in 2005, got $5 million. We had 33 studies submitted for funding. If we had had all those studies approved, if they were good studies and a lot of them had not been fully developed like they should have been, it would have been over $20 million. We have survived with CDMRP research between $5 and $10 million this last year, thanks to Kachinik before he didn't win in his election. We knew that the VA had cut research funding in the Gulf War veterans, and that was found out. They hadn't told anybody, and he had a request in for $10 million. He upped it to $20 million when we found that out. Even with $20 million, you're limited to starting with small numbers. If you prove something in small numbers, then it has to be repeated with a larger number of, you know, carefully selected sample Gulf War vets, and to validate it. Okay, so what we've been able to do is the small scale, small numbers, in a number of areas, looking at neurological problems with the fMRIs, with the newest technology software update of DT technology, looking at the biomarkers Dr. Klimas is doing. All of it's pointing us toward an inflammatory response.
That's what we knew from day one and what we taught from day one.
But what we're trying to get is actual diagnostic studies that can nail it down, you know, because they're always scared of people coming in and getting something that they don't have, okay? Instead of taking the vets for their word and, you know, getting them taken care of and compensated, they will drag their feet, as we know.
I think there's something else for people that have never been involved in university research or any of this stuff and this stuff. And this is, again, for everybody to understand. When you apply for a research grant through one of the federal agencies or anything, you've got different components. You actually have the research costs itself, and then you have what's called overhead.
Right.
So for every one, I know with universities where you taught and were involved in, the same thing in the university I've been involved in, and everything for a long time.
It's like 50 or 60% of the cost
that is overhead.
Is overhead.
Yeah, yeah, so for 50 to 60 cents on every dollar goes into overhead costs. So this is not spent on doing research studies where it's actually looking at patients or looking at animals to determine what happened. You've only got 40 cents out of every dollar that's actually used for the research purposes. So, again, this is the bloated overhead research staff, because when I was applying for research grants and education and training, dealing with hazard materials and the nukes, the bombs, and all this kind of stuff, we were trying to modify the curriculum and everything else. I had to mark down, I think it was 57% of the research budget would be allocated to overhead. So it was only 43 cents out of a dollar we had to use.
And that gets down to the space at the university and what it costs to maintain that space.
Well, it's
it
not
does
the space
not count.
Stuff, it's
it does not count
overhead.
Having your assistants, and you have to pay your assistants. You have to pay their portion of their insurance during that time that they're not covered otherwise. So it gets down to really, it gets chopped down quite a lot. And, you know, I went through all the budgets and all these, and I asked some hard questions and said, you know, can't we do better? They didn't like that portion of what I brought forward because that's just the way it's done. You know, your universities that take 50% to 60% right off the top for, you know, their use of their university space, electricity, whatever they put under that. Then you have your assistants that you have to pay for, you know, they're going to devote their time to this project. So So the actual ability to be able to pay any travel has been cut down to zippo for those vets that want to volunteer and be part of or be selected. A lot of times the travel is not provided. I know Georgetown, Dr. Veronica contributed, you know, frequent flyer miles to cover the cost of getting vets there because the vets couldn't afford it. There's all kinds of creative stuff being going on to be able to get the vets to be able to participate. The other thing, and Dr. Leah Still and I had very deep discussions when I was down in Texas, of you also have to have, you know, for the highest level of research, you need to not so much take volunteers as be able to have a list of those that were in theater exposed and do it in a scientific, highly scientific method. Where it's not a volunteer basis, but, you know, you pull them up from exposed groups and the criteria if they have these symptoms versus, you know, other diagnosed illnesses and ruling those out. If you have a diagnosed illness of, well, you know, that kind of mixes apples and oranges. So, you know, you have to strive for the highest scientific principles to have it really hold the weight we need to.
The thing we came down to, and this comes back to the same thing, and we've seen all this stuff done before, and when they're doing data analysis, they do what's called regression towards the mean, and this assumes everything, the probability is equal for everything. And they're using the wrong type of statistics to do all the work because this stuff is not random in nature. We know what happened to a certain group. These are the physiological effects. It's not random in nature. The effects on everybody are very different because of the complex exposures were very different. And you could have two of us, and Denise, you've actually done medical testing and medical care for some of the team themselves. You've seen what happened to us. So you knew we were there in exactly the same place at the same time, and our physiological constituency and how our body is made up resulted in different effects, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And, you know, some of that comes into genetic susceptibility, too, of your family background and any genetics that are there that might make you even more likely to show the symptoms earlier. Now, I will say that Dr. Haley and the UT Southwest, I feel, had done things the right way. They took a group of Navy Seabees that had come forward to Ross Perot.
Well, we knew
those
they
Navy
got that Seabees, for sure.
Those Navy Seabees were throughout the theater, as you and I both know, setting up all the facilities. They were in the exposure areas. They were very sick early on, and we had that group formed up. They took them. They did the initial workup, and a lot of that was funded by Ross Perot, front-ended, and then they had an effort to get some of the funds back from DOD. And Haley went back and did a 10-year catch-up with this initial group. And they had done surveys. They had developed the surveys that could be used in the future and do telephone surveys with any other population as a starting point. And then they used every neurological study that this team that he brought in, it wasn't just to UT Southwest, he brought in experts from other universities. And they had really problem solved out what neurological studies would be there. He was looking for the neurological diagnostic gold standard for us. And they put these CBs back through at least, what was it, 10 days, from early in the morning to late in the evening, putting them through every neurological study they had come up with as a potential. And out of that, they were going to try to get the best studies for the neurological work and have the survey, have the testing, and get it down to like a 3 to 4 day period of time instead of 10 days, you know, early in the morning to late at night running our veterans through all these different tests. And by doing that, he was able to narrow down the neurological test that would be the gold standard, at which time his next step in It was a 5-year project that was funded, a great celebration starting it for 5 years, $15 million a year. The next year three, four, and five would be devoted to bringing in the other Gulf War vets, be it Air Force, Army, Special Forces, Marines, Navy, you know, a good cross-sampling from a list of, I think there was 15,000 that they had saved this list from initially Gulf War vets that had been seen with problems through the DOD, I believe it was, from the DOD registries. And their next step was, okay, we're going to do phone surveys, get that completed, then from that group select, you know, the ones to bring in. He also had identified twin studies, being the fact that we had sick Gulf War vets that had twins that did not go. So you would have a healthy group, age, sex matched, with twin studies, which is a very high level of research. And the bad boys got loose and stopped that program at the start of 3 years. And
well, that's because
we lost
a
lot.
Definitive information, and he had definitive tests with the MRIs and all this stuff that actually showed the damage. And so it was all there. It was totally evident. But what he had proven is what we knew from day one and taught from day one in theater with the medical management, chemical, and biological casualties course. And then when we did the DU stuff, all of it just kept building and building and building. Because the CBs, I know, I mean, when I met those guys and worked with them, they were sicker than a blue blazes. They had absolute known nerve agent exposure from Scud detonations in theater, totally confirmed. The 256s, the M8, A9, all of that confirmed the exposures. They literally had the clothing that changed, I mean, was damaged and had, you know, little physical damage to the clothing from the exposures. So there was no doubt at all what happened to them.
The only drawback with that group that we could have worked out, you know, if the studies had gone forward, is that some of these had been in service during Vietnam. And we know Agent Orange exposure, you know, for that group would impact somewhat. So, you know, it needed some further work. And, you know, if he had been able to continue on, I think he would have brought in primarily the Gulf War vets without, you know, potential for Agent Orange as a cofactor there.
But still we have to remember this stuff. Anything that aggravates a condition afterwards, we all got zapped by Agent Orange. We know Agent Orange was totally 100% confirmation now of the use of Agent Orange on Chanute Air Force Base during the 1960s and 1970s in Rantoul, Illinois. The individual that used it has 100% disability now, totally confirmed that he told us where he sprayed it. So, yeah, you had all those physiological effects, but still when you go back to war again, whatever physiological condition you have, if you get ill or aggravated again, the VA is still responsible. The Department of Defense is still responsible. So it's not
I'm just talking about hard criterion research to narrow it down to Gulf War damage, Doug. But what we have to see, and what I've gotten in many fights with vets, two areas. We have had this for 22 years now of people searching around for the one exposure.
And it never was.
We've had the people searching for the magic documents that would prove it.
There never was any.
And the only thing I can say is I guess combat vets really want their Purple Heart for damage at war instead of health care and, you know, treatment. But we've gone around and around, and every time we bring people in to the discussion, they want to center on the documents that prove exposure to chemical or the anthrax or whatever. And as I said on my first trip, and I guess it's a nurse educated nurse master's degree that I can look at it and say, hey, the proof is in our bodies. So let's just find the proof. You know, we may never be able to zero in on the one exposure that pushed it over the top. It's like a little snowball that starts an avalanche, you know. But they get lost in that. And then we get into a battle of what's the good of research. Well, first of all, the VA from the get-go has, and I believe this was brought on by the DOD and cost factors and all kinds of other factors, wanted to limit it to stress. And every study we had for years upon years upon years was dealing with stress. Then we slowly got them to, you know, do other things, but it was kind of like the Band-Aid of CPAP, you know, if that's effective to help the, you know, affected Gulf War veterans, or acupuncture. I call those adjuncts of what you can use to help treat, but we have to nail down the exact damage, and that's the hard work that was being done through CDMR research and not through VA, of really looking for the biomarkers. And, you know, like what Haley and Georgetown was doing of nailing down the neurological damage by the best technique possible. And so, you know, vets are frustrated. They're not getting their claims through. We have presumptives that the VA regional offices still do not read that reg like it's supposed to be. These are presumed, just like heart disease, diabetes on the Vietnam vets with Agent Orange. If you claim it and you have it, therefore you should be rated for it. And they don't do that. And so the vets have their claims battles that they're trying to keep their families together and survive on a basic level, much less going into VA doctors that have not caught up or been caught up on the research findings, and that this is real physiological damage, that they need to open their minds and really do the best testing possible for these vets and get the research findings into the clinical area as quick as possible.
But they're not doing that. I mean, it's sort of like when VINS came out and that whole committee came out with the report, was it 2008?
Right.
That defined everything perfectly. That report has still never been seen by a majority of physicians that I've had personally, other physicians that I've talked to. And you ask them, okay, did you ever get this document that confirms this and this directs the physiological, tells you what the physiological effects are, what the medical testing can be done today? Because one of the things, and especially with depleted uranium, and for those people that, I mean, we're involved in, on the Internet and Facebook discussion of depleted uranium, people are still asking about doing a DU urine test today. Ladies and gentlemen, that was supposed to be done within 72 hours of exposure, not later than 30 days post-exposure. Because after 30 days, you can do all the testing you want, and because of bio half-life and all this other stuff that we could explain to you, but it's going to take a long time, it's not detectable in the body. And so as a consequence, what we have is the physiological effects that are showing up from the known consequences of all these complex exposures. Because all of this stuff is synergistic, as Denise and we've talked about, interrelationships. So individuals, again, we've been on Facebook. Again, I've answered some, said, well, they're not eyeing me the DU test. Well, they should have given it to you day one, which is what the Army regulation was, and all this stuff. So it was a very large group of people. I had 424 individuals at Kilpatrick and Rochker and the PSOB totally confirmed, known. These were the guys, Friendly Fire and my team, that got zapped. And then we had all the others that worked on everything and moved everything onto stuff on and on and on that were in vehicles that didn't get reported. So, I mean, you know, the numbers are huge. And this stuff goes a long way. It's like the pesticides. It's like when we blew up all the bunkers, 105 sites with chemical agents, biological agents. We made the decision to blow up in December of 1990. Again, that's in Schwarzkopf's autobiography, It Doesn't Take a Hero, on page 390. Chuck Horner, remember, was that, 10 years after the fact, you and I met with Chuck Horner, and he was madder than blue blazes, and the reality is, my God, when we blew it up, we made everybody sick. He was sick at that time himself. Remember that, Denise?
Yes, I remember. That was on the 10-year anniversary, and the Kuwaiti embassy put that on.
Yeah, we were all there. And at that time, it was the same thing that's going on. So, I mean, we're seeing the same thing, and I think what's important, and I keep working on this, trying to educate and explain everything to it, just like we've done tonight and we've been doing for a long time, is the horrific physiological effects on everybody, from the neurotoxicities and the brain functions and all the effects on the body, synergistic relationship from complex exposures. And it's all, each individual had a different exposure, but all this stuff, I mean, it came up to be horrific when you get to the end of it. But we're also seeing the same thing on all the civilians, and it's even far worse for the civilians. I mean, there's been another recent study coming out of Iraq with the incredible cancers and all the other stuff related to DU in the area where DU is still there contaminating everything and where we blew up all the chemical biological functions. I mean, we literally blew the stuff up, releasing it all over on the Iraqi and the Kuwaiti and the Saudi population, on all of us, the coalition forces, and that's why we got everybody sick right off the bat and continue to get worse. And this stuff doesn't necessarily show up as an acute physiological reaction like, you know, you get a cold, you get exposed to the bug, and a few days later you get a cold. No, this stuff lingers, and then all of a sudden it nails your butt, and nails your butt really, really hard. I don't know. It's just, it's terrifying to look at it, because we have to understand, and this comes down to it, the physiological effects of all these complex toxic exposures are far at far lower levels than ever imagined, and far worse than anybody ever thought they would be originally, from the, i.e., peer-reviewed acute case exposure research. I don't know. I'm trying to explain this thoroughly and understand, and hope everybody can understand what's happening and the what for and the why for. But this IOM thing, redefining the definitions and still holding it to stress is my... We gotta get that. Oh, you said once before, Denise, didn't you say get God's army to march right in and demand action?
Yeah, I've had deja vu so many times. You know, the meeting place for this IOM, Doug, was at the National Academy of Science building.
Right, yeah, they gave us a parking spot because we were up there so much.
And it was so funny because David Wynette's a great person, great Marine. And I think everybody acknowledges that. And he has talked about the numbers on the wall. Well, that was what I brought up at the first Presidential Advisory Committee meeting that we had, that Hillary Clinton, the First Lady, then at a hotel in downtown D.C.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah,
Denise.
And at that point, I think we had 58,000 coming forward as sick way back then. And I mentioned in my public comment on that day that I was reflecting on the wall, 58,300, whatever number it was at that point in time. And I said, and we have at least that many known sick right now.
Well, we've got over 100,000 dead now from Desert Storm exposures.
So, you know, it was like deja vu. We've been in that building before when we had interesting meetup with Admiral Zumwalt, who was ignoring the DU problems. I think that was another IOM or either a oversight board.
That was, Admiral Zumwalt and Colonel Mikey Nalen from the Army were with the PSOB.
Yeah.
And that was an IOM hearing, and we were all there. And before the thing, we were all goody-two-shoes, and Buddy was everybody, you know, drinking and joking, like slapping back.
Yeah.
We're all friends, and
but
then
here
we all
were in
the
same building.
Yeah, and then we testified and blew everything out of the water. I think what is most interesting in all this stuff, and again, we're working with it, the information's out, Joyce Riley got it, other team nurse got it here in Illinois from the Zumwalt family, is the now we know that Zumwalt did write a report way back in 1990 confirming all the physiological effects from Agent Orange, confirming the fact that the VA, it's been the IOM specifically lied to everybody, and his family had given that to us with the intent to get the truth out. But at that IOM meeting, he was holding to the lies. And I remember Mikey Nalen wouldn't testify, even though he was supposed, so Admiral Zumwalt did the boss on that meeting for the PSOB. But afterwards, he wouldn't talk to us at all. I mean, it was kind of like, you know, well, I'm going to lie now, Doug and Denise and everybody else. I'm going to ignore you because we all know the truth, and how do I face you when I'm lying through my teeth? Well, he did end up dying of cancer himself from his own exposures, just as his son did.
And you know, it's like the saga continues. I reflect back on the first time I testified at Shaves Committee. We said never again. The Vietnam vet said never again. And here we go again. And it's being repeated with our OIF and OEF veterans. It's like our country does not pay attention to the veterans after they do what they've been asked to do. The cost factor, the DOD doesn't want to give up their equipment budget. You know,
they don't want to give up their weapons, even though they know the weapons are horrific consequences.
And that it can cause our own forces to have problems, you know. And I tell people, I said, you've got to look at the history. Look at the history of Agent Orange. And in the last 5 to 10 years, there's been an effort from Vietnam civilians to, you know, be covered and have money from the U.S. to help with their birth defects and their illnesses. And so that's part of what they look at is long-term. And, you know, if they acknowledge it with the vets, then they open the door to your population in the affected areas. And the costs after a war just continue to escalate.
Has anybody called in? Is there anybody online waiting to talk? I know I put the word out earlier today on Facebook. People could call in and discuss things. Was anybody out there? Okay, if you want to, again, 888. I just blanked out. I want one of those things, brain fogs. 888-874-4888. Again, 888-874-4888. I mean, I never know when that's going to happen.
Yeah, the just drop off of your memory occurs.
It just ceases. And it was one of the reasons that you dropped out of medicine, wasn't it?
Yep.
I mean, how many have we had that on our teams and everybody's dropped out of medicine because of the neuropsychology and the brain parts that you have? All of a sudden, everything will be there, and all of a sudden, it's like it doesn't exist. It's totally blank. And then you take another 2 foot or you backtrack, and all of a sudden a switch comes back on. I mean, this is totally, I mean, it's not unique at all for complex toxic exposures. But what the unique situation from Desert Storm and from OIF and OEF and everything in between is everybody was extraordinarily healthy before this happened. And now we're seeing the physiological consequence of all these exposures. You know, so this is a toxic exposure, it's a neurotoxicity. And then, I mean, then we do have to come back, and there is a portion there, and I mean, I deal with this on myself with stress. For all of us who went to Vietnam originally when we were young puppies, I mean, I was all, I think, 18 or 19 years old, 18 when I enlisted. And yeah, was I 19 before? I don't even know, I was 19, I guess maybe 18 when I, 19 when I had, yeah, before, right before my 19th birthday, when I had my first deployment. 20th birthday. But we know today the Gulf of Tonkin incident never occurred. With Desert Storm, the whole thing was the same thing. All this stuff was a charade to get the troops in there for the military and the oil and everything else, just like OEF and OEF. So now we do have the ethical and moral crisis that we're dealing with the reality of understanding what happened and what we thought, my God, I killed for this, and it's not the truth that I was told. So that's either in the conscious or subconscious, that's affecting everybody. I mean, it's a horrific thing to deal with, in addition to the incredible neurotoxicity that levels with everything. I know, Denise, what's your weather? The weather here in Illinois has been horrible. We've had rain and wind and cold and hot and warm and rain and wind, and it's been all over the place. And so the barometric pressure has been going nuts. And the temperature's been going nuts as the humidity, and on the physiological effects on everything is, for me, is horrific. I mean, you're hearing that
every place. Normal people can adjust to that. Ones that have been neurotoxin damaged, yeah, they're going to be affected. And then if you ask them to travel, I mean, I can tell you, traveling for me is more of a pain now by air because it just... I already have problems in my body, and then I'm taking it out up to altitude, and it's, you know, a stressor on my body like it never was before. And, you know, even in normal life before Gulf War, you know, going and doing training missions and being up at altitude was tiring, but you'd recover after that night. Now it lays me out for a week or longer. You know, just on the air travel, much less, you know, when you get there and doing things. And what, you know, I remember a meeting that our benefactor, Ruth McGill, got us to in Dallas, and she rented those scooters. And it was an effort to show us that even when you come in for a meeting and you're going to the meeting, the normal activity that you do is being impacted by our neurotoxin damage.
Well, you and I were fortunate enough that where we did have IV therapy and detoxification under some of the greatest doctors and scientists.
But neither you nor I or any of them she brought in got a full, I mean, you came in for 4 or 5 days. A full course to detox is at least minimal a month. They're starting a new, they have funded the Hubbard detox, and they'll be doing it in Baltimore, and they're doing it over a very concentrated, I mean, you've got to be there every day, 6 month period to really try to detox people using the saunas, using, you know, supplements, so the vitamins. It's much longer now to try to help your body any.
Yeah, again, you're optimizing remaining function is all we can hope for. I mean, that's one of the things, again, it comes back to, and I know when I'll be out or I get in my own care, or I've stopped and chased all over the place, you know, help me, help me, help me, what do you know, give me a document. But people still expect some magic cure to happen, and it's not going to occur, ladies and gentlemen. It's just not going to occur. We can optimize remaining function. We can have surgery to repair damage and try to get it back as close as possible. But once you've been zapped, you've been zapped. And I wish I had another answer. And, you know, all the work we've done with Kilpatrick and Rocher and the PSOB and OSAGWI and the IOM and CDC and the VA, I mean, it's frustrating. And I know.
What's really frustrating is we had environmental doctors at the beginning, and we had the ones that believe in the Hubbard treatment to try to, you know, get people in there early, try to help detox their system early. And that was the whole clue, is get right on it. The environmental doctors, other doctors went forward to the VA asking them, let us train your doctors. We can help this group if we get started as soon as possible. The ones that Hurricane Katrina, the 9/11 that happened in New York, the people have gotten those Hubbard treatments up and going and have significantly helped if they get to them quickly and are funded. Now we're 22 years after the effects, and yeah, it can help, it can optimize, but they're not doing it routinely for healthcare to help people. Yeah, the damage has been done. Our hope always was to prevent it from happening to another group, and we've got OIF and OEF that's showing that they have problems.
Well, the IOM in their January report confirmed the little chemical sensitivity and the fact that the signs and symptoms of physiology, physiological effects for Desert Storm are matching exactly what we're seeing in OIF, OEF. The only difference that we didn't have there is we didn't take the OIF, OEF didn't take the PB, periostigmine bromide, which is a nerve agent itself, and didn't get zapped by the oil well fires. But everything else they got zapped with, totally.
Well, they
100%.
Probably didn't get the same level of nerve agent exposure.
Correct, they've had horrific pesticide exposures.
Yeah, they had terrific pesticide, which is organophosphate, same as nerve agent. But they did not blow up bunkers.
Correct.
They didn't hit it in an air war. So there are some significant differences on levels of exposure.
Yeah, then they've got a lot more. I mean, we had the burn pits and everything, you know, and the hazmat during Desert Storm. But again, nothing to the extent with the burn pits and the confirmation of those physiological effects. And I mean, even though the memo from 3rd MedCom is out, 3rd U.S. Army Medical Command is out there recognizing the physiological effects in the burn pits, which goes back to Desert Storm, the VA totally disregards that memorandum directing medical care for these health effects. So, I mean, it's coming back to the same thing again. They have it, the information is there, but the accountability, because it's not just the vets that are infected, it's all the civilians. right. that are affected. So, I mean, it's coming back to when you go to war, what did you go to warfare, and why are you leaving the place totally physiologically, environmentally trashed for eternity?
Yeah, and you have the vets that are damaged that are looking for that one document. Yeah, that one document that would prove their exposure.
How many times have we been asked for that document?
Yeah, and how many times have we told them that after, I think it was Major Johnson testified after Gunny Grass, that there was an order given by, I believe, General Blank to
destroy him in Florida. I mean,
yeah.
Cy Hirsch verified it. That's in his book. GAO confirmed it. It's all total knowledge. I mean,
and
Robert,
you know, how much
Patrick
do we have to refer people back to the Regal and Rockefeller study to get the basics and then to look at what the congressional side has done? There was a Senate special investigation done. I mean, how much do we have to chase our tail around the bush again? And what we need to do is let's come together to hit the goals that we need, be it support our RAC committee, support our chairman, that has been a very positive, to support what CDRP research is trying to do, even though we got a late start getting the right stuff done, and to push that more presumptives be added, that data be shared. It's been February of a year and a half ago that we had data on the pre-9/11 and how many are sick, how many have died, what are their diagnostic codes. That data has not been shared for over a year and a half.
Well, we're running out of time. Denise, the music is coming up, so we're getting ready to transition into the next program. So, ladies and gentlemen, again, more information, the Progressive Radio Network Warrior Connection is giving you key information and documents. Denise, can you make sure we have this stuff on the IOM so we can post it on the archives?
Sure.
Okay, well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again, and God bless America. We have to take responsibility and force the leaders, those people we elected, to help us. I don't know any other way around it. Well, thank you again, and God bless America.